Welcome back to Missing. I am Tim here today with Lance. Lance, how are you today?
Doing pretty well today, Tim. We're coming off of a night last night where we raised some money for our nonprofit, Private Investigations for the Missing. And in just about an hour and 20 minutes, we raised over $1,000. So I just want to start off right from the jump here with a big thank you to everybody who donated. You can still donate because we want to hit that $5,000 mark by February 3rd, which is National Missing Person Day. And you can go to investigationsforthemissing.org where you can find a link to donate. But, Tim, I want to find the link to how you're doing today.
I am doing great. Thanks for asking, and thanks for mentioning the nonprofit Private Investigations for the Missing and the fundraiser that we're doing over there. That is going to be Monday's episode of Missing. We're going to play some of that. So if you're not inspired to donate yet, maybe you will be after hearing that. This episode, though, Lance, is about the death of Amber Tucaro. She went missing in August of 2010, last seen near Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, and her remains were found in 2012. And as of this recording, her case is an unsolved murder.
And we were joined by Jennifer Amell, and you can just tell how frustrated the three of us are as we're talking about the, I guess, lack of investigation or lack of urgency with the law enforcement in regards to Amber's death. And you just have to feel like this has something to do with the fact that this is a Native woman in Canada. And even though Canada has come to terms with the fact that they have been the perpetrators of some severe atrocities towards Native people, this is one of those examples of how back in 2010, 2011, 2012, these types of things were still happening and being severely ignored.
Yeah, this is a pretty egregious investigation, as you'll hear about. And if you have any information, you can submit a tip to Crime Stoppers anonymously at 1-800-222-8477. And Amber's killer or killers are still out there. So if you have any information about Amber or about her case, please make the right decision and place a phone call. Again, Amber went missing on August 18th, 2010. She was 20 years old at the time of her disappearance, 5'6", 144 pounds, black hair, brown eyes, was wearing a purple hoodie, most likely. She apparently was last seen near Edmonton hitchhiking with an unknown man, and her remains were found about 2 years later.
And while you're listening to this episode, I'd like to suggest that you go to a website that is called culturalsurvival.org, and their mission is to advocate for Indigenous people's rights and support Indigenous communities, self-determination, and cultures, political resilience. Since 1972, they've been around. And you can also get a lot of good information about the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Children Movement for Change.
And if you love what we do here at Missing but want it ad-free, you can now subscribe via Apple Podcasts for just $2.99 per month to the ad-free version of Missing. But if you want the ad-free version and our bonus show, our weekly bonus show, Lance, you got to go to missing.supportingcast.fm.
Ooh, I'm writing it down now, missing.supportingcast.fm. I'm going to swing over there now, and I'm going to sign up, and I get ad-free episodes and a bonus show. It's like all of these secrets that are hidden in the universe. It's like the secret menu at the In-N-Out Burger.
Okay, everybody, follow us on social media at Missing CSM. Thanks a lot for listening.
Hello, it is your partner, Big Boy. Interested in giving back to your community while making new connections in your neighborhood? Introducing Neighbor to Neighbor, a California volunteers network that empowers you to take action, contribute to local needs, and be a part of something bigger than yourself. Visit caneighbors.com to learn more about how you can get to know your neighbor and strengthen your community. Neighbor to Neighbor, it takes a neighborhood. Hello. Hello, it is your partner, Big Boy. Interested in giving back to your community while making new connections in your neighborhood? Introducing Neighbor to Neighbor, a California volunteers network that empowers you to take action, contribute to local needs, and be a part of something bigger than yourself. Visit caneighbors.com to learn more about how you can get to know your neighbor and strengthen your community. Neighbor to Neighbor, it takes a neighborhood. Hello.
Jennifer Amell, welcome back to the podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me. Great work, guys, on this case that came through recently from Marianne White. She did fantastic work on the research for this. And I love that we're covering more missing and murdered Indigenous women on this show.
Ditto, same. Really, we're covering one from Canada today, but it doesn't matter where the territories lie. It doesn't matter where the borders are. It's all sort of a universal issue. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. And every one of these is tragic on so many levels. And I really appreciate the way Marianne can put these together in a narrative that is consumable, powerful, and thought-provoking. Which is what we have here.
Yeah, big shout out to Marianne. And Amber Alyssa Tucaro was born on January 3rd, 1990. Amber is a Canadian First Nations person from Fort McMurray, Alberta. And she went missing on August 18th, 2010, was 20 years old at the time of her disappearance, stands 5'6", weighs about 145 pounds, black hair with blonde streaks, brown eyes, and she was last seen wearing a purple bench hoodie, and that was near Edmonton, hitchhiking with an unknown man.
I feel connected to Amber. We have a similar birthday, and we're both Canadian, January 21st, 1990.
Amber was adopted by Andrew and Vivian Tucaro. She was a baby at the time, and she was welcomed into their family with four older brothers. They lived in Fort Chipewyan before later moving to Fort McMurray. And it's said that her brothers always looked after her growing up, and her mom constantly talked about dangerous people and being cautious. That, right off the bat, just strikes me as very endearing, because four older brothers welcoming an adopted baby girl into their family, immediately being protective of her, just is heartbreaking right off the bat to me.
Yeah, I also flagged it as like a stark difference in upbringing, that her mother was always warning her about dangerous people and being cautious. I too am from Canada, and I think like my childhood was kind of marked by safety. Like, Canada is not really known as being a particularly dangerous country. I'm from the eastern part of Canada in Quebec, and she's from the western part of Canada in Alberta. Growing up as a First Nations person in Canada, like, this is a group that's disproportionately affected by crime, murder, domestic abuse. So I flag that as very different, just from the get-go here.
Amber and her family are members of the Mikisew Cree First Nation. At the time she went missing in 2010, she was living in Fort McMurray, Alberta, with her mother and her 14-month-old son, Jacob. One source says that she was moving back and forth between her mom's house and a woman's shelter.
And on August 17th, 2010, Amber left for Edmonton, which is the capital of Alberta, on a short vacation / spontaneous trip with her son and a female friend. One source says that Amber met this friend named Evangeline at a woman's shelter. And Amber's mother had expressed concern over this spontaneous trip, but Amber assured her that everything would be fine and it was just for a couple of days.
And Amber kept in contact with her mother throughout the day, sending many texts and updates as she always did. Amber and her friend booked a motel in nearby Nisku, as their plan was to stay in the Nisku Place motel outside the city in order to save money and then head on into the city later.
And sources differ on why Amber left the hotel. Some say Amber went out to get food, while others say she was too excited to wait to go to the city, so she decided to go early. But no matter the motive, we do know that Amber left the hotel on the evening of August 18th, leaving her son in the care of Evangeline.
That strikes me as kind of a risky move to take, leaving your young child with someone you don't know very well. I guess maybe I'm just assuming that they don't know her very well, but doesn't seem like Amber and Evangeline knew each other for all that long.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they are on this trip together, and I understand if it was just, a short trip out to get some food or whatever. It's like, hey, can you watch my son for a couple minutes while I run out? But it doesn't make any sense that Amber would leave for an extended amount of time and leave her son in the care of someone she didn't know very well.
Right. Somebody that she met at a homeless shelter, obviously started a friendship with. And like you said, Tim, this doesn't seem like it is a relationship or a friendship that goes, that dates back years and years, not something that is, you know, a childhood friend, somebody that she met in a homeless shelter. And is there a holiday or anything around that time frame, like the 17th and 18th, 19th of August, that is maybe a Canadian holiday, or was this just truly a spontaneous trip into the city?
There's no Canadian holiday that I know of.
Amber was last seen accepting a ride with an unknown male, and Amber either received or made a phone call during this ride where the man driving was overheard in the background saying they were heading east to Edmonton, though police now believe he was actually driving south into Leduc County. Amber suddenly stopped all communication with her mother at this time, and it is unknown exactly what time this phone call took place. But it is said to be the last communication Amber had with any of her friends and family. And when she didn't return the next day, Amber's friend called her mother, who in turn called the Royal Canadian Mounted Police to report her missing.
Jen, there have been some rumblings about a botched investigation. What do we know about this?
Yeah, so Amber's mother claims that the police never took her daughter's case seriously. The police even told Amber's mother that she was probably out partying and would get in contact with her later. And her mother insists that Amber would never leave her baby. But the police told her that she had to at least wait 24 hours to file a missing persons report. But the police didn't interview Amber's mother or anyone involved in this case for 4 months, which is insane. I find it interesting that they alerted the RCMP before any kind of local police force, because the RCMP is like a federal, like the FBI, sort of.
I was hoping to get some clarification on that. So the RCMP is the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And you just said that they're more like the FBI. So they are called in when crimes might have been committed over certain borders?
Potentially, or the RCMP will take over like very high profile cases and stuff, or like complex homicide situations. I don't know what would make them get involved or not get involved in a missing persons case. But regardless, it seems like nobody did anything for 4 months in Amber's disappearance.
To make that clear, her mom called the RCMP, and we don't know what their level of involvement was. Mm-hmm. You're just saying it was interesting that that's where she turned.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So a little bit of context around here. It's been in the news a lot over the last, I want to say, like 10 years. It's been a huge like political platform for the left too in Canada. But for context, there is a human rights crisis in Canada where a disproportionately high percentage of missing and murdered women are Indigenous or First Nations. In Canada, Aboriginal women represent 3% of the country's population, but 10% of its murder victims. And the epicenter of this human rights crisis is the highway 49 miles north of where Amber was last seen trying to hitch a ride. That's Highway 16 in Canada between Prince George and Prince Rupert, British Columbia, and it's known as the Highway of Tears. And it's along this highway that so many Indigenous women have been kidnapped and murdered.
What is it about this highway that makes it the epicenter of the Indigenous missing and murdered women crisis?
Well, it's hard to really put your finger on, but I would say a lot of it stems from systemic issues such as poverty, generational trauma, and domestic violence. A lot of First Nations women don't have access to vehicles, so hitchhiking is pretty common among them. It's a common way for Indigenous people in Alberta to travel to cities for medical care or to visit family members who are living in these big cities. And apparently more than half of murders of Aboriginal women in Canada are unsolved.
And 2 long years passed with nothing being done to look for Amber. And on August 28th, 2012, police finally released a recording of a phone call from that day, from the day Amber went missing, where Amber can be heard saying, quote, "You better not be taking me anywhere I don't want to go," end quote. And Amber was on the phone with her brother, who was incarcerated at the time. And so the phone call was automatically recorded. And the call lasted 17 minutes, but only 61 seconds of the recording was released. And we're going to play a clip now.
Where are we by?
We're just
heading south of Beaumont, or north of Beaumont.
We're heading north of Beaumont. Yo, where are we going? No, this is a... Are you f***ing kidding me? You better not take... You better not be taking me anywhere I don't want to go. I want to go into the city. Jeez. Yo, we're not going in the city, are we?
We're going.
No, we're not.
Yes.
Then where the f*** are these roads going to?
50th Street.
50th Street. Are you sure?
Absolutely.
Yo, where are we going?
50th Street.
But I wonder if Amber actually had that thought, like, hey, I'll call my brother because I know that phone call will be recorded.
Interesting thought.
I think that that is a great thing to point out, because everyone's first question is, why would this phone call be made to her brother who's incarcerated? Because if she's in a position where she thinks she might be in trouble, is she reaching out to police in that moment? Does she feel safe enough to call police in that moment? I don't mean like safe with the police. I mean safe with the person that she's with. So reaching out to her brother ensures her that the phone call is going to be recorded, and it also ensures whoever is with her that, hey, she's just calling her brother? Does that make sense? Like, as opposed to, I'm going to call the cops? And it's interesting, a few people came forward at this time claiming to know the man's identity, and they all even identified him as being the same person, an individual named Pat Carson, who is a known sex offender in Alberta. However, police have said they looked into him and he is not considered a person of interest, which is interesting that police would say one way or another whether or not someone is a person of interest. I wonder if that was like an official press statement or something unofficial that was just told to family and friends.
But apparently, I mean, according to police, the identity of this driver in the phone call is still unknown. But if they did know the identity of this driver, it would likely lead to a resolution in Amber's case.
And just 4 days later, and 2 years after Amber went missing, on September 1st, 2012, horseback riders found Amber's remains in a field in Leduc County.
And while it's fortunate that a resolution happened, it's truly unfortunate that it was her remains that were found and positively identified. And I'm curious if there is any sort of indication on how she died. Do we know anything about that, Jen?
Yeah, so we don't have any information like on an autopsy result. We don't have any statement from police or a medical examiner about what the state of Amber's body was. We don't have a cause of death. So it's really difficult to comment on this. But apparently four bodies were found in the area where Amber's body was found. And this leads some people to believe she was the victim of a serial killer.
And the reason for that is because the individual exhibits the same pattern of behavior. These were all indigenous women that were deposited in one area, and they were all women who were hitchhiking at the time they disappeared, all last seen around Edmonton. So that's the thinking behind a serial killer.
Yeah, which is quite possible. I mean, it would unfortunately make sense for a person who is trying to murder women to go after indigenous women, because we know that they're historically not treated seriously. Like, their cases aren't treated seriously by police. They don't have any resources, or no resources are dedicated to finding these women. So they're vulnerable victims.
And the four women are Edna Bernard, who went missing on September 22nd, 2002, Katie Sylvia Ballantyne, who went missing on April 28th, 2003, Dolores Brower, who went missing on May 15th, 2004, and Carrie Ottenbright, who went missing on May 9th, 2004.
So that's interesting. That's all pretty close together in terms of the time period. But then we have Amber 4 or 5 years later.
Yeah, and a description of the vehicle that Amber was seen getting into has never been released. Seems like that would be valuable information to put out there.
Yeah, like if only for a public safety announcement. It's like if these women are still hitchhiking, I mean, they've got to get to the city somehow. If they don't have cars or whatever. But if they did put out the description of this vehicle, they would know to avoid a vehicle like that, or maybe call in a tip to police if they did see that vehicle.
It is an interesting statement to make that the description of the vehicle that she was seen getting into was never released, as opposed to phrasing it like there is no known description of the vehicle.
I mean, it seems like if they did have an eyewitness of Amber getting into a vehicle, that they would at least know if it was a truck or a smart car or a scooter, you know?
some sort of the color, like some range of description there. So it is curious why that hasn't been even stated. Like, we don't know what type of vehicle she got into. We know she was in a vehicle based on the phone call.
Why did she hitchhike at all? If there was a car, they traveled there with the car.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, maybe she left the car because her friend had her child, and if they needed to go somewhere, it would be easier for her friend to just put the child in the car and drive, like if there was some reason to leave.
That doesn't make any sense.
I'm really trying to piece together some reasoning here why she would leave in the first place.
Yeah, I'd like to know more about this friend and why Amber was forced to get into another man's car.
And we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Teachers, administrators, and other school staff play an important role.
Education can be a shining light, and it's really the equalizer for everybody.
You are making a difference in people's lives, including your students.
You can have a really bad day at school and still realize that what you're doing is making a bigger difference.
We are the best profession in the world next to doctors, but even a doctor had a teacher.
Find what helps at cdcfoundation.org/how right now. A supportive work environment can help everyone working in schools stay resilient.
Just finding people that can reassure me that I'm doing my best and that there are people out there who understand me and can help me through these situations.
You are not alone.
Leaning on each other, colleagues in education is essential. You have to.
We take care of one another.
Find what helps at cdcfoundation.org/how right now. That's cdcfoundation.org/how right now. A lot is being asked of people working in schools.
Teachers have more and more things to do.
The shortage of teachers right now, having to fill a lot of holes and wear a lot of hats, it's very difficult.
There are steps you can take to manage stressful times, whether in the classroom or outside of work.
For me personally, I can disconnect by just being outside.
Laughing works a lot.
Find what helps at cdcfoundation.org/how right now.
Thanks to our sponsors, and now we're back to the program.
Also, getting back to the serial killer theory, is that something that the public was talking about, or the media, or was the police putting the feelers out there about there being a serial killer?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I feel like that would probably be something in the public consciousness if all of these other women's bodies were found in the same general area. And that would definitely be something that the media would pick up on.
Yeah.
Don't know if that was sanctioned by the police or not. But concerning the investigation and the lack of investigation right when Amber went missing, her family actually filed a complaint with the Civilian Review and Complaints Commission for the RCMP in March of 2014. The independent review of the RCMP's investigation released a 120-page report in August of 2018.
And the commission concluded the RCMP's investigation was, quote, deficient in that various members were either not properly trained or did not adhere to the training, and that various members did not comply with procedures and guidelines, end quote. That's pretty bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's super frustrating that more energy went into putting together a 120-page report on how the investigation was deficient. More energy went into that than the investigation.
Yeah.
And more resources probably went into that, which is super, super infuriating.
Yeah, it's misplaced energy for sure, but I am glad that there is some type of like oversight on the RCMP, and that, you know, there's other agencies kind of looking into malpractice in the RCMP.
So was Amber ever listed as a missing person?
So Amber was eventually listed as a missing person, but in less than 2 weeks she was removed from this list because there was a number of unconfirmed sightings.
Okay, what does that tell you? I'm just going to tell you what it tells me. That several people, or maybe one or two people, contacted police to give these unconfirmed sightings so that she would be removed from the list, so that the police would think that she wasn't in danger, that she was just out on her own and not contacting her family.
They're like, great, now we don't have to do any work.
Great.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, was that it's sort of confirmation bias, I think, on the police's part. Like, they already said that she's probably out there partying somewhere, and then when they hear unconfirmed sightings, again, unconfirmed sightings, they said, oh, no, see, we told you, she's out mm-hmm. there. We don't have to do anything now.
How does a sighting become unconfirmed? And this is just a question that probably has no answer. The phone call comes in, and the person answering the phone says, oh, you saw Amber Tucaro. Where did you see her? At the store? Okay. Did she seem to be in danger? No? Perfect. Then there's no follow-up?
Yeah, I would hope they have the names of the people who called and reported those sightings, because you're right. I think that is suspicious, or potentially could be suspicious.
Yeah, absolutely. So the police never followed up on these sightings. They didn't corroborate these sightings with any kind of surveillance camera, with other witness statements. They just took these reports at face value.
But she was put back on the missing person list.
Yeah, she was. She was put back on the list on September 23rd, 2010, and no apology was made to the family, but the report said removing Tucaro from the missing persons database was a, quote, erroneous decision, end quote.
Ridiculous.
To say the least.
Erroneous is not strong enough of a word.
Yeah.
Catastrophic, I would say.
Yeah. Why even take someone off the list anyway?
I know.
Until they're found.
I mean, at least confirm the sightings. I don't know. You know, it doesn't make any sense.
Get this, guys. The RCMP never even interviewed Amber's female friend, this Evangeline woman, the one who was traveling with Amber. She was never considered a person of interest, and her name was even redacted in the report. But I find that very strange.
Yeah, very polite to Angeline. Yeah. And a suitcase found in the motel room containing Amber's belongings was, again, erroneously destroyed when Amber's name was taken off the missing persons list.
Oh my God. That's insane.
Egregious. Yeah.
What is going on with the RCMP here?
I don't know, man. Like, that's one thing to, like, not do any work, but to actively destroy evidence or, you know, clues or the person's belongings, like, that's crazy.
Or the person themselves by taking them off the list mm-hmm. and then destroying evidence.
Right.
And not contacting the last known person that she was with mm-hmm. or one of the last known people that she was with. How is her name even redacted? How is she not a person of interest? How is that not interesting, just by definition, that you, as the technically, I guess, the second to last person that we know she was with, that is not interesting?
Yeah, I mean, Lance, you even brought it up, like, that it was interesting that they had traveled to this motel together in a car, and then Amber had to leave for some reason and didn't take the car. Like, that on its face should give the police every incentive to go and talk to this friend.
Right, because she either didn't let Amber take her car, which I'm guessing it was the friend Angeline's car, because I think we learned earlier that Amber didn't have a vehicle. Mm-hmm. Or there was some kind of fight or something, and she's, like, leaving, later, leaving abruptly or something like that, you know?
Why would she leave her son?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me, unless she was trying to get out of there quickly or something. I mean, well, that makes less sense, actually. Right. I don't have any clue. She could be a little inebriated, I would say, as an observation from the phone call.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible too.
Not to promote the subscription show, but I can't wait to give some further theories on our subscription show about this. I'm holding back a little. So where are we at now with the family? How did they react to this erroneous investigation?
Well, I mean, first of all, I can't even put myself in the place of Amber's family. I would be so lividly angry about how this was handled. But Amber's mother, Vivian, she's also known as Tootsie, she's become an activist. She's traveled to Ottawa in February of 2014 for the first ever roundtable into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, this MMIW movement. And coincidentally, it was also the one-year anniversary of the death of her husband, Andrew. And she and dozens of families across Canada met with premiers, representatives from six national Aboriginal organizations, and two federal cabinet ministers. And there she expressed her support for a federal inquiry into the issue. The issue being lack of investigation and lack of interest in missing and murdered Indigenous women.
Yeah, and she believes this could highlight the gaps that exist, especially in the area of reporting a missing person. And here's a quote from her. She says, I guess being more caring and not just saying, oh, well, she will call anyway, she's probably just out partying. Like, have more respect and more compassion. You know, don't just treat her like she's nothing. I'm not just speaking for Amber, but for all the missing and murdered, end quote.
You know, that reminds me a lot of Pepita Redhair's mom, Anita, when she said that this is a human being. Her daughter was a person. When will they hear our voices? This theme is universal. And Amber Brothers Paul participated in a national inquiry along with his wife, Judy. The two of them decided to take part in order to keep Amber's story alive, despite initially being told her case may not be included. And for 2 hours, he testified about the lackadaisical nature of the investigation into Amber's death and shared his belief that things may have turned out differently if the case had been handled properly. I think he's just stating obvious things at that moment, frustrated and stated obvious things. And he explained that various branches of different police detachments had been in control of the case throughout the course of the investigation, with no one regularly updating the family on its progress.
And he also shared recommendations that he hoped would make a difference in solving cases involving missing and murdered Indigenous women, saying police should be banned from stereotyping victims, and those who do should be disciplined. He also suggested that families be allowed copies of any paperwork filed with the authorities and that the RCMP's policy about waiting 24 hours before filing a missing persons report be abandoned.
Brilliant. Again, he's stating obvious things, using this frustration to make his voice be heard at this moment. I mean, it makes no sense that you need to wait 24 hours before filing a missing persons report. I mean, it's just one of these antiquated pieces of red tape that just can go away and probably not affect a single thing. Like, what's going to happen after 3 hours? You're going to get an influx of people reporting a missing person? Like, is that what they're worried about?
Oh, no, more information.
Yeah.
No, you're right. I mean, you're right. The concern is more work. The concern is they put out a report and then a few hours later, this, you know, person returns from wherever they were, you know, their friend's house or and they, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what they're worried about.
Yeah.
But err on the side of caution, for God's sake,
exactly.
Because the downside of this is that somebody gets murdered.
Or never found.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or never found. Yeah. It's insane.
I love the suggestion to have police be banned from stereotyping and disciplined when they do so. Because if Amber was a white woman who was not Indigenous and went missing, and if a police officer was like, she's out partying, like, it would just be handled so much differently. Probably wouldn't even suggest that she's just out partying.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're totally right. And while, like, I'm sure the family and other families of missing and murdered Indigenous women were happy that this inquiry was happening, Paul, Amber's brother, shared his frustration on how disorganized this inquiry was. He's also noted how poor aftercare was for those who chose to speak at numerous hearings held across the country. And while he was offered on-site support and given information on how to apply for counseling once he got home, he says he was unprepared to determine his own aftercare needs. I mean, this is a whole other issue of, like, secondary victims of crimes, right? Like,
yeah.
They just don't have anywhere to turn. They don't have any kind of plan in place to set them up with therapists, to join support groups. Like, you're just kind of left on your own to deal with this. Nobody explains to you the process of how to deal with law enforcement. Like, none of it. You're just on your own. And that's a problem in this country, too.
Oh, for sure. And it's very detached. You have individuals who are making these decisions and saying, here's how you apply for counseling. Okay, wipe my hands clean of you. Let's move on to the next secondary victim. Here's how you apply for counseling.
Right. Exactly. I mean, Canada has universal health care. So this is definitely something that could be put in place.
That's a great point. And we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
A supportive work environment can help everyone working in schools stay resilient.
Just finding people that can reassure me that I'm doing my best and that there are people out there who understand me and can help me through these situations.
You are not alone.
Leaning on each other, colleagues in education is essential. You have to.
We take care of one another.
Find what helps at cdcfoundation.org/how right now. That's cdcfoundation.org/how right now. A supportive work environment can help everyone working in schools stay resilient.
Just finding people that can reassure me that I'm doing my best and that there are people out there who understand me and can help me through these situations.
You are not alone.
Leaning on each other, colleagues in education is essential. You have to.
We take care of one another.
Find what helps at cdcfoundation.org/how right now. That's cdcfoundation.org/how right now.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Or what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the host of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it. And we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks to our sponsors, and now we're back to the program. In 2017, the Takaro family increased the reward for information to $5,000 and created a Justice for Amber campaign on social media.
And Vivian is quoted as saying, "I'm 56 years old now and raising a little boy that is so full of energy. He drives me crazy, but at the same time, he's my sanity. I mean, he's all that I have left of my baby." And she's speaking of Amber, obviously. And she's talking about her grandson, Amber's son, Jacob. She goes on to say, "Just the way he looks at me sometimes and the way he stands like his mommy. The way he says words, he says them the way Amber used to. Like Amber had a witty attitude, and that's what Jacob has." And she says this as she is sobbing about her murdered daughter.
And Amber's family also runs a Facebook page called Justice for Amber Alyssa Takaro. And they still regularly post on the page about how much they miss Amber and how they want to find the person who murdered her. Her mother and brother are both on Facebook, and a post from Amber's brother, Paul, on September 23rd, 2021, was shared on the Justice page on July 10th, 2022. And the post says, "Last person seen with my sister, Amber, has been interviewed a few times and each time gave a different story. The CRCC report says that she is to be recognized as a person of interest, but the RCMP fails to recognize that, and only once COVID is over, they will attempt to contact her. But again, she's white, which means in the society we live in, she gets a free pass, and my sister doesn't matter because she's native, and they are mistaken because we will never give up, and in time, we will be given an update." And then he posts her name and a pretty clear photo of her.
Yeah, that's a bold move.
Yeah.
I don't blame him, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we know what she looks like, and hopefully the RCMP has interviewed her by this time. Like, when was this post made? 2021?
Yeah.
So a full year has passed. I certainly hope that they've at least spoken to Evangeline.
Man, not to get nitpicky on the details, but what a convenient pandemic COVID is for a lazy police department.
Gosh, yeah. How many times have we heard that too?
Yeah. Once COVID's over, once the pandemic's over. I mean, this is 11 years after she disappeared. Now, well, can't do anything about this pandemic.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in fairness, it did hold up investigations for real too. But it is also a convenient excuse at times. Yes.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Why can't they pick up a phone and call Evangeline?
Exactly.
Well, they can.
Well, there were some comments under the post that they don't understand why she would be a person of interest because she wasn't in the car with Amber. Amber's mother responded with, quote, "There's more to the story, which I won't be going into," with a couple of exclamation points. And then a little back and forth happens with a couple other people, and Amber's mom says, quote, "This is Amber's mom, and I don't have time for this," with a couple of exclamation points, end quote. And then she goes on to say, quote, "Fuck with your opinions," with a mad face emoji.
Back in September of 2019, the family, Amber's family, filed paperwork to exhume Amber's remains for DNA testing, as they are unsure if the skull found is actually hers. And this comes from their distrust in the RCMP. I don't know what would make them think that this, the head found with Amber's body, is not her head. That's crazy. But Paul, her brother, explains that he has his doubts given how fast the identification occurred. He also notes discrepancies between Amber's dental records and dental fillings present in the skull. They hope to compare Jacob's DNA to that of the skulls to either confirm or deny it belongs to Amber. Jacob, Amber's son, is now a teenager.
And on January 24th, 2020, the RCMP publicly stated that they had received a tip on Amber's homicide profile. And here's the quote. "In early December 2019, the Banff RCMP was contacted by a male who alleged that his father may be responsible for a missing person from the Banff area. The male also stated that he believed that his father may be linked to numerous missing persons and homicide files in Alberta. On January 20th, 2020, the male advised the RCMP that he believed his father to also be involved in the disappearance and murder of Amber Tucaro," end quote.
Well, the RCMP did investigate that information, but determined it was unsubstantiated. They said the person who reported the tip has a history of fabricating tips, and some of the cases he said his father was responsible for had already been solved. So just to further convolute things.
I mean, that's definitely a thing that happens, right? Like,
yeah. We were just talking about it, how that's kind of a phenomenon that that we should dig into. So maybe
yes,
maybe
we can probably
episode.
Do a few episodes of cases that have had family members come forward to say my father was involved or my grandfather was involved, and it turns out that they are serial fabricated tippers.
Well, I don't know if that's true. Like, I don't know if like this is an outlier. About a person who has fabricated tips before, but it certainly is a phenomenon that women have come forward suspecting their husbands, fathers, boyfriends of being serial killers or murderers in some respect. I think that hints at a larger problem of like domestic abuse and poor behavior from men, but we can definitely potentially get into that on our subscription show.
And according to Vivian's personal Facebook page, Amber's brother, Billy Joe, recently ran for and was elected as chief of the Mikisew Cree First Nation.
Good for
him.
That's
incredible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
And the Leduc detachment of the RCMP is currently asking those with any information regarding Amber's murder to contact them. They have shared her description in the hopes it would jog someone's memory. And at the time of her disappearance, she stood 5'6", weighed approximately 145 pounds. She had black hair with blonde streaks, and her eyes are brown. She is believed to have been wearing a purple bench hoodie.
And those with information regarding the case can contact the Alberta RCMP at 780-412-5261 or the Leduc RCMP at 780-980-7267.
Tips can also be called into Project CARE, spelled K-A-R-E, at 1-877-412-5273 or 780-509-3356. Or you can submit anonymously via Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-8477. And if you are trying to call from this country in the United States, be sure to include the country code of 1.
Hello, it is your partner, Big Boy. Interested in giving back to your community while making new connections in your neighborhood? Introducing Neighbor to Neighbor, a California volunteers network that empowers you to take action, contribute to local needs, and be a part of something bigger than yourself. Visit CAneighbors.com to learn more about how you can get to know your neighbor and strengthen your community. Neighbor to Neighbor, it takes a neighborhood. Hello. Hello, it is your partner, Big Boy. Interested in giving back to your community while making new connections in your neighborhood? Introducing Neighbor to Neighbor, a California volunteers network that empowers you to take action, contribute to local needs, and be a part of something bigger than yourself. Visit CAneighbors.com to learn more about how you can get to know your neighbor and strengthen your community. Neighbor to Neighbor, it takes a neighborhood. Hello. Hello, it is your partner, Big Boy. Interested in giving back to your community while making new connections in your neighborhood? Introducing Neighbor to Neighbor, a California volunteers network that empowers you to take action, contribute to local needs, and be a part of something bigger than yourself. Visit CAneighbors.com to learn more about how you can get to know your neighbor and strengthen your community. Neighbor to Neighbor, it takes a neighborhood. Hello.